CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com. What is it? It's a Wednesday morning. Gord Laws, C.S. Sangweni, and I, along with you, on the 24th of March. What happened, C.S.? Did you bump into something? C.S. hadn't switched on his camera yet, and all we heard was him bump into something. What was that, your name?
I was running back because I could hear that the show started, and then I've just properly hit my whole foot against this table.
James, yeah, you must be careful of this. I mean, really, how old are you to still be bumping into things? Okay, it is. It's a busy day. We've got Phil Kutzer joining us just now. There's loads of things on the agenda. I want to talk a little bit about women's sport because I've watched in the last 2 weeks essentially two whole sports bulletins that have been telling me that I need to care about women's cricket, women's rugby, and women's soccer.
Well, and what do you mean?
Well, so this was in the major news bulletin of one of the channels in South Africa, that all three of those are extremely important and I need to pay attention. Now, let me be fair. I don't even care about standard men's
sports
rugby,
in general,
men's football, men's cricket. I don't give a shit about that stuff. I've never really been a big fan of sports. So I'm not the right target market for this. But I have to tell you, like, there's something so patronizing about the way that people are in the media. There seems to be this push to show that, you know, there's this women's sport and it's so great. And they're interviewing like the captain of our cricket team, whose name I cannot tell you. You know, even though I'm not a sports fan, I can usually tell you the name of like the last rugby captain the Springboks had, or I can't tell you who this lady is. And I'm sure that she's really good at what she does, but nobody in the world.
It's got to start somewhere.
Yeah, I know, but God,
women's sport doesn't have the money, so they don't have the infrastructure and the participation uptake and the coaching and all of that that the men's sports do. And then as a result, the quality is better.
It's boring. It's boring to watch, but it's not as good. It's not as good.
If you look at how like the UFC just integrated women's MMA, I don't know, I'm guessing 10, 12 years ago. And initially it was like there was a big outcry. People didn't want it. Well, a lot of people didn't want it. They said it was subpar. And for a while it was. But I mean, now the top level women are, I mean, pound for pound, they'd kick the shit out of most men. So, you know, you've got like your Amanda Nunez's and your Rose Namajunas Yunus's who are just, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who are just as impressive martial artists as any man, and they make a lot of money pay-per-viewing their coolness.
Maybe. I mean, listen, again, I'm not the best person, but I saw this on the TV news the other day, and I saw them like giving it a real push. They're like, women's sport is really great, and here's a women's cricket captain, and she's talking about how like they're going to face off against some other country's women's cricket team. And I was like, nah. Even if I was the kind of guy to be interested, it just feels like they're selling me something that's just not good. You know, if someone's trying
weren't
to
they just reporting?
You know those little vacuum cleaners that go around the room on their own?
Roomba. I've always wanted one, even though I know it's going to be a piece of shit and it's going to knock my router and my power supply on the floor so they're not in a straight line and I'll go crazy.
You want those things, even
I
though
just
it's
want
a piece of crap. I just know it's not going to do the job, and I don't want to have one.
Becky Chan would murder it.
Why do you say women's sports isn't exciting?
It isn't. I have watched some, and it's just very. It's like God. A.
I'm going to be in all these sound bites of you, your controversy.
I just have to say, like, there are obviously those standout people, and Gord, you mentioned them already. So in MMA, but I mean, there's Serena Williams, she's a fine tennis player to watch, and there's no way I can raise any
women's interest. Tennis is
plus
dope.
I know Ben and I know Bulelo and Ben have spoken to me about this before, and they said you're an idiot because you're missing out, and probably they're right. I don't know that I'm the most well versed in this, but I will say I think they're trying to sell me something. This is where I do understand a little bit of marketing. I might not understand sport, but it seems like they're trying to sell me a product that I don't really need.
Maybe they're just trying to build a brand from the ground up and are not especially efficient at it. I mean, you kind of answered the question that it's a little bit of both. trying to get awareness onto something good, and also kind of trying to, I suppose, speak in a bit of a patronizing tone, but like women's tennis, as I said, MMA, there's in America, especially soccer. I mean, I think if you put the infrastructure in place, give the opportunity, and ultimately there are certain sports that where it's a physical strength thing, but women can be as, in terms of skill and capability, like martial arts is a great example. Yes, they're smaller, so they fight each other at the same size. But in terms of being ninjas, women can be as ninja as any man. And the same with tennis. And golf. Golf's big with women.
You used one or two buts in that sentence, which means that you're trying to sell something too.
I am. I'm trying to sell you women's MMA. It's cool.
Fine. Fine. I'll accept that I'm just not the target market. I just hate it when people are trying to sell me something because they've got an ideology, they've got an idea, they've got a particular agenda, and then they want me to conform to that agenda. It drives me crazy. So please, can we
stop? I'm very surprised by your opinion.
I don't know. Sometimes I watch this stuff and I'm like, just stop trying to oversell something to me. And I mean, Here's Dogozo, who disagrees. He says he watched women's rugby in the Cape Town Sevens tournament in 2019, and he said he really enjoyed it. Women's sport is underrated.
That's a good example because I forgot about that. I was at the Sevens. I've been to all of them except one since they've been in Cape Town. Hmm. And they included women's games in the last – it's also like it's a really high – for those who don't know Sevens, it's a short game, high pace, no real scrumming or mauling. It's basically just dudes – it's like touch rugby where you can tackle hard. And a really exciting game. And the women's games were really very good.
I'm surprised, Gareth, because you don't watch sports, don't care for sport like that.
No.
And then...
But you do watch the Olympics when it happens, right?
No. Well, no.
Okay, lots of people do that. They're not into sports.
So with you not caring about sports, why would this affect you so much? Or why would you...
It doesn't affect me so much. I just thought it was something interesting to discuss this morning. I'm not going to go on a crusade against women's sport here. That's not my intention. I just brought up that while I was watching two separate news bulletins on two separate days, they were trying to sell me how great this – one was women's rugby, the other one was women's cricket, and then there was also a story about women's soccer. And I just thought it was interesting that this is a priority thing on the agenda. They're telling
you – So it was glib and twee the way they spoke to you in a condescending way about something.
Yeah, I didn't like them overselling the thing. That's all I have to say about it.
Are you aware just that – tiny little bit that it does sound a bit backward.
Yeah, of course. But that's part of the reason we have this.
We're here to discuss things and have opinions and air our thoughts and figure it out together. And,
I'll just leave it alone because clearly, I'm not the intended audience for this particular new fad. It's just not something that's like. Also, I don't want to see women playing rugby. To me, that's why. There are
same reason men do.
I don't know. I don't
the
even
thrill of smashing another human being at high speed.
Let's get into this.
Gareth, it sounds like you're going to say women must be in the kitchen making the sandwiches instead of
Gareth
playing.
Didn't say that. Let us
that's
move
what
along.
It sounds like.
I think I've made myself very clear on the gender equality page, and I've done enough to prove it too. Let's just go to this. So I don't know why, but this guy decided to pick a fight with me like a year ago or whatever. He's like a daytime DJ on the station that I used to be on, 5FM, and I never had any beef with him. In fact, we got along pretty well when he was there and I was there at the same time. Anyway, it turns out that, this is firing time and hiring time in radio. And someone forwarded me Rob Forbes's resignation, which is just, it's like, this has got to be one of the saddest things I've ever read in my life. And I thought I'd share it with you this morning. He says, this is his resignation, right? Or either his resignation or they fired him. I don't know which one it is. He goes, there is no next radio show plan. I have no new show lined up somewhere else. That was never the goal. Radio is one thing, and I'm far too interested in far too many things to make this the only thing. So this is my radio retirement too, for now. It is time to go and do the other things I have planned, and I'm really excited to finally be able to do so. Thanks for tuning in. It has been a pleasure. Now, you can read that literally and you can say, okay, good. He's on his way out. Or you can say, wow, this guy really didn't have a plan. And he was just going to hang around in radio until they eventually did get rid of him, which is clearly what's happened. I think it's, you know, it just sounds like this guy has nothing else to do. And I kind of feel a little bit sorry for him. So I wanted to read it out today and say, you know, dude, I'm sorry it didn't work out for you, however many years you had, you know. It's clearly this was not for you. You're just not competitive commercially and nobody wants you. And I'm very sad for you on that.
Or maybe he just really does want to go and breed ducks on a duck breeding farm out in Nelspruit and, you know, learn astronomy.
Sure. If you're good at those things.
Maybe he is. I think like, yeah, cool. There's a time to move on. I mean, I kind of quit FHM in the same way. I was over the subject matter. I saw that the medium was declining, but I was also like, look, I can do this for another 10 years until it's so not working financially and industry wise that I have to leave, or I can leave now while I'm on a reasonably good wicket and go do something else.
It's just like, it's a loserish, don't you think? I mean, like, you're not saying, this is we'll reunite again. You know, I'll occasionally tweet something interesting, or don't worry, I'm not going away. This is like,
I just took it as saying, don't worry, guys, I'm not leaving you for someone else. I'm leaving entirely. I don't know. I respect it. I think 5FM or SABC for an extended period of time. I'd also rather go breed ducks in Nelspruit.
Well, you're making a lot of assumptions that he's not including in his little resignation speech. I found it to be really lukewarm, really pathetic, really like nowhere. It's just not that's not something that you could respect. So I don't know how you get that, Gord.
In today's edition of DJ Beef, Gareth Cliff versus the Rob Guy. MC, when you make a DJ battle?
I have to say, I had no issue with this dude. You know this, Sia. I think he tweeted something about me like last year, or about podcasting being stupid or whatever. I was like, what are you?
The ENCA TV show.
There's back beef now. Now we're getting to it.
Right. It was about our ENCA TV show. I was like, what? You've never done any television in your life. You've never garnered an audience on radio. And now you're going to tell me that I shouldn't be doing this show. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So you can call me petty for bringing up his dumb resignation letter. But I think, you know, he started this one. And I'm not above being petty sometimes. I'm not above being a competitive man some of the time.
What I love about people saying whether or not.
No reason. I do like a fight every now and then. It's important to me.
I love it when people have an opinion on, look, ENCA is a little different, but I'm talking about the podcast specifically. Like, Gareth shouldn't be having a podcast. He shouldn't say this. He shouldn't say that. Like, you're not mandated by anyone but yourself. You're not put in your position by the government. And if people hate you, they can bitch at the government until they cancel you. You're not mandated by DSTV where it's like, we'll insist multi-choice get rid of you if you won't leave on your own. It's like, all you have to do to get rid of Gareth and his opinions you don't like is not click three links. They don't open on their own. So bugger off. But I mean, hey, if you've got beef with a DJ, I can't get involved. I don't know the guy.
Carl has some feedback for me. He says, you're coming off a little bitter with this thing. You keep saying people should leave the SABC. Now he does and he's a loser. Well, we don't know if he left or if he was fired. That's not clear.
We don't know. Sounds pretty leavy to me.
But here's an interesting point. Gord, are you already baked and it isn't 8 a.m.?
Have you not been paying attention? This has been going on throughout the show.
But Gord, let me ask you something. Do you do this just because of the show?
I mean,
do you light up just because you're on the show? Or is this your standard morning routine?
Well, I go through phases where I smoke more or less or not at all. So I'm not going to pretend I haven't been smoking outside of the show. But it's my excuse to wake and partake because it really disrupts my day doing the show. I'm just one of those people that doesn't go to sleep 2 hours earlier to get up 2 hours earlier. So it's like, well, I try to keep when
you're not listening to me. How many joints have you had so far? And is this a normal daily routine for you?
No, to start this early definitely isn't. And I think I've just started the third one.
Jesus.
I keep Wednesdays clear for like, shop admin missions and stuff that's low mind, high admin. So I'd try to avoid important meetings and all of that workday stuff. And there's days where I can't make the show because I can't afford to get up 2 hours early and talk shit when I've got a lot of work to do. And that's why people know that I cancel sometimes. But on a Wednesday morning, I get up heinously early. I drag my tired ass out of bed. I brush my teeth.
And we appreciate it.
Roll a joint and I sit my ass down and I talk some shit while smoking. But no, I don't smoke at 6 a.m. every day by any means.
We like that.
There's this pseudo something that happens every time I see you smoke that I almost like can smell it. I can feel it. It's just,
You know, Gordon, I have only a few friends who smoke weed, but I respect their right to do that. And I have no problem with weed myself. And I think the effects of weed on society are probably a lot better than the effects of things like alcohol, which I am a proponent of. So I'm not going to, this is not some big drug conversation, but that smell, dude, I've never, ever got used to the smell.
And people it goes away when you do get used to it. That's the thing.
People tell me they're like different variations of smell, but to me, it always smells horrible.
I can tell you if it's an indica or sativa or something not too remarkable just by walking
around. Really?
It's like wine. I mean, some have clearly different distinctive smells. You can tell it's definitely not one of these, and it's probably one of those. Maybe not narrow it down to the exact type, but if you know wine, you'll be able to put it in a category just by smelling it. And then if you want to further analyze and differentiate, you need to partake of some and compare. But yeah, you can tell if it's good or bad easily. That's a huge, you can tell that immediately where on the spectrum of shit and good it is. And you can usually tell whether it's a sativa plant or an indica plant. And people who say they can pick out the strain by walking past a neighbor's window smoking, I think you may be overrating your ability to differentiate. But there's for sure a difference, 100%.
What about this? Kelly says, Gord, you were saying for the longest time that weed wasn't your thing anymore.
Good question. So for the first time in my life, since I went keto 7 months ago and have lost about 75 kilos, for the very first time in my life, a whole lot of other things have happened. And I'm not for a second trying to suggest that smoking weed's now good for you and everyone should do it to cure your glaucoma. In terms of productivity and overall well-being, it's not a positive, right? But I also don't think it's terribly destructive. But what it would do to me is it would take my eating disorder and make it uncontrollable. Then I'm enjoying smoking weed, which I always have, but I'm anxious about how I'm eating even more and I'm aware of it and gaining weight. And then you become depressed about that. And then you smoke even when you're depressed. That you don't want. So
we had
the first time in my life, it doesn't affect my eating. And I'm really enjoying smoking if it doesn't mean every joint I have equals 4,000 extra calories.
Well, dude, first of all, that's incredible that you've lost 75 kilos.
Estimated, it could be more, but it's at least 70. Yeah,
I'm really like, I know you specially asked not to make a thing of this until you've got to the weight that you want to get to, and I understand that. But I just got to tell you, man, that's like almost two Sears.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can get as much congratulations as you want, but when you know that the minimum, you don't know how heavy you got, but you know it was at least 210 kilos. It's like you've cleaned up quite a lot of spilt milk that you spilt yourself. But I also have learned a lot about this that I don't want to really discuss until I've gotten through it and figured it out about the psychological aspects. I've done tours of NAM before. This is very different. This is like patience. It's easy. You just have to be patient. So it's a very different energy. And also, you know, my weight issue is the reason why I end up having to quit weed. It's having an adverse effect on my health and my mental. So I should quit at some point, but the fact that it's not affecting my well-being in terms of happiness and focus is just great. 20 years of smoking weed on and off, and this is the first time I don't have the major downfall, the negative aspect of that.
It's amazing that you've done that. Congrats, dude.
Thanks, man.
Get there. It's really impressive. And I'm, you know, there's a lot of people would say, oh, you know, well done, Gord, and you've lost the weight. But I know what a struggle it's been for you, and I know how you go up and down. And these things are behavioral largely. But if you found a way to kind of have what you want and smoke the weed and be able to control the weight, that's just tremendous. I mean, thank God, right? I mean, we all figure out different things. different things about our body's ability to regulate things.
Waking up, dude, from just changing my diet, right? Like, forget the weight stuff. Like, I wake up at 7 every day, whether I want to or not. And I have to manage my going to bed because I can't get in that extra hour or two if I've gone to bed. And usually that's work. Usually I get stuck into something late and suddenly it's 1:32 and I go to bed. I wake up. This has never been the case. I've always been, since a child, one of those people who's really hard to go to sleep. And I'm like a 3-alarm clock coming out of anesthetic person. And now I'm just like, I'm wide awake. It must look 7:04. And now no going back to sleep. And it's great, why do you look, but it's like different.
Why are you looking so concerned?
It is just, it's just not for me. And so I struggle to figure out how you can cope and you can smoke and you can drive and have a productive day with it. To each their own, really. But yeah, I can't get it.
I'm blessed with a couple of best friends, but one of the real candidates for best friend of all time passed away when I was 24. And like, now I just mourn for people who didn't get to know him. But my boy Bundy and I were big into smoking and hip hop. And there's a lyric from a Method Man song that says, "Hey kid, walk straight, master your high." And our belief was always, even in our early 20s, that if you're going to smoke, don't walk around looking like you don't know where you are, bleeding eyes, haven't brushed your teeth or hair for some reason, and go be gross around the mall. Smoke and carry on.
Gordo, is that the friend of yours? Because I saw you post something probably on Instagram a couple of days ago about this friend of yours. What happened to him?
My boy, Stephen Bundy Bundred. He was my best mate for 14 years, and I was a year older than him. So I was 24. He was about to turn 23, or he just turned 23. I mean, maths this a little bit. He was 23.
Yeah.
Along with another one of our very close friends, Darren McGill. They were, after we all got drunk at a, what's that, like Dross or Keg or whatever there by Billy the Bums? We were there, and I actually missed the Jewel. And when the Jewel ended and they closed the place, everyone went home, and a couple of guys wanted to go and continue partying. And they hit a pavement going way too fast on Louis Buerta, and then the car went upright and flew it through a bus stop and into a traffic light or a street pole. So that was like one of the great traumas of my young life. And we all got, me and a massive group of friends, all got a bunch of tattoos out of it. I got another one on the 10-year anniversary. But yeah, we used to grow and smoke spliff. And he was my boy, Stephen Bundy. We'll never forget him. And Darren McGill, both good dudes. Yeah, losing two close friends at a time is seriously hectic. And then in my friend group as well, in the rock and roll community, we had a week where we lost three people separately from each other. And the one dude was supposed to be the pallbearer at the second dude's funeral. And between the guy dying and the funeral, so there was a missing pallbearer. It was like, I've lost a lot of friends, but I guess it's a side effect of having a lot of friends, which is a great blessing. But yeah, losing your best friend when you're 24 will take it out of you. Thankfully, I've got other best friends, two or three, that are the best a guy could ever ask for.
I want to just show you something quickly, because I think you'll love this, Gord. It's come up so many times when you've been on the show. there's a story in the news. Woman feels discriminated by KFC over lack of meat-free options. So she goes to KFC.
The restaurant that has chicken in its name.
So here it is. I know you're going to get really upset by this, but this is brilliant. So someone comments on this, on the story, and this is where I love the internet, you know, because sometimes you hate the internet, but this is where you love it. So here's someone's reply to the story about this woman who feels discriminated against by KFC because they don't have enough meat-free options. Okay. This person says, "I completely sympathize. The other day, I went to World of Carpet to buy a new telescope, but was astounded and disgusted at the complete lack of optical equipment."
World of Carpet.
It's almost perfect. As if they purposely set out to satisfy the needs of carpet buyers, but deliberately snubbed those who weren't. Utter madness.
I hate that. Carpet World really just don't have any, they don't give a shit about anyone except people who like carpets. It's disgusting.
That is the best response I've seen in a very long time.
But I like the memes where it's somebody's stupid statement and then a funny comment underneath. Like, yeah, those are usually, and you always wonder if that was really posted and someone screen-grabbed it or if they like made it.
Like, I've got an agenda here, and the agenda is that I know we've spoken about this a million times, but it is amazing to me how people go onto the internet or they go into their real lives and they want everything in their universe tailored to their particular needs. People must just know that that is what you want, and that they should be catering to you. It's got nothing to do with your ability to discern where you are going to find what you need. It's got everything to do with everyone else in the world laying out the red carpet for you. And I do think that this is something that many people still labor under the misapprehension of every single day. It's just incredible. What did you say, Gord? You're on mute.
Shit, sorry. It's a massive assumption that I'm making because I don't know anything about the story except what you've just told me. And to divorce it from the whole meat versus non-meat thing, which then becomes a religious debate where no one can ever be wrong. But like this entitlement issue of like a business chain, the brick and mortar stores, the signage, the brand, advertising, the product, everything has nothing to do with me. It was here before I was born. It'll be here after I die. They'll never know my name. But I expect this world that has independently sprung up like flowers with buildings and businesses and services to cater so specifically to my need that the chicken restaurant, should I happen to be in that place at that time and need food, is on standby with what suits me. That's a mindset that can go to complaining about your show when you have never forced to listen to it, all of that sort of shit comes from auto-write.
I think this is a syndrome. I really do believe that this is something that's going on in the universe at the moment that we need to be aware of, because I see it more and more. I see people who demand that they get the course of their dreams in, let's say, snail genetics, and they want it in isiXhosa because that's their language, and they want to study it at the university that must be 5 kilometers up the road from their house because that's convenient to them, and it better happen yesterday. People want everything in the universe because we live in a consumer culture, and we've all been raised with this customer is king nonsense. We think that we are entitled to everything that our hearts desire, and it's not a world that we live in.
It takes away from issues like, I mean, education in isiXhosa is probably massively underrepresented, but that example aside, it takes away from the real issues where something does need to be done about something that isn't fair, because everyone just complains about whatever they don't like about how other people are doing their shit.
No, my example stands. Like, you cannot have everything tailored particularly to your purpose and to your desire. It's just, that's why I loved this story. And I thought, if there's some vegan running around and she's upset about KFC not offering more meat-free options, then it's not KFC that's the problem, honey. It is you.
Go to Pizza Perfect and you're terribly upset they don't have hamburgers, although they probably do at Pizza Perfect. Bad example.
This is the point, right? Like, people do want this. They want everything they want now, and no one else can tell them what to do. All right, let's welcome Phil. Phil, are you there? There he is. There's Phil Kutzer. That's a nice looking office, dude. Are you at the office or at home?
No, I'm at home. How's it, guys? Morning, Seattle. Morning.
Hey, Phil. Good morning. That a picture of Johnny Clegg behind you? Can you just do a shoulder shift? You got to go the other way. What a legend!
So cool.
Champion of a legend.
Hey, by the way, speaking of Johnny Clegg, everybody, I saw Jesse Clegg had a little baby.
Muzzle.
Yeah. Yes.
Him and his lady Danny, and like, I think they kept it a little bit quiet, but I'm so stoked for them. And what a brilliant bunch of people, the whole Clegg family. Johnny, I was blessed to meet him a couple of times, and Jesse, I know, and they just, that's an example of family raised right. And young Jaron, they're great.
Yeah, they're awesome people. So listen, a new addition to the Clegg family, and then Phil's got a big painting of Johnny in the background, which is awesome. So Phil, how's Ermelo, first of all? We haven't checked in with you for a while. People are starting to think that that we weren't talking to each other. What's going on, man?
Yeah. No, thanks, Gareth. Yeah, everything is going well, I think. I think the last time we spoke was, I think, around about the beginning of November,
Well, we tried to talk to you. We tried to talk to you like a month ago, but you had it wasn't COVID, was it? Did you have COVID or was it?
It was just man flu.
It's the most bizarre thing, getting sick during COVID, because you're feeling, even if it's a mild cold or proper flu, you're feeling feelings you've felt many times before. And like every cold or flu you've ever had in your life up to that point, probably not COVID, but until you have Schrodinger's COVID, or Shrovid as I call it, where until you get the test result, you're in a state of both COVID and non-COVID. So it's odd when you're sick and then it turns out not to be COVID. I've had it once. It's good, but it's like almost disappointing. Like, I've been through all this snot and coughing and shit, and I don't have any immunity. Anyway, let's get back to the topic at hand. Gareth is frozen permanently in a gigantic
spider. Yeah, I was going to say.
That or Medusa walked into his office.
Frozen.
So you got a bit sick there, Phil. What was the story?
No, it was just normal flu. I got tested, but it's just negative. But yeah.
Did they pull it out of your soul via your nostril?
No. I paid an extra to do the throat one because I just can't do it anymore. I think I have five or six.
Goes in your nose, through your eye, and into your brain.
Yeah. Sounds horrible. All right, so Phil. We've got a very specific bunch of questions that people want answered, and I thought you're the best guy to help us figure this stuff out, right?
Sure.
First of all, I mean, we've had such a crazy year last year, and you and I met during lockdown last year, and I've really enjoyed the experience of kind of driving these different cars, because what the hell do I know about cars? You're educating me from the ground up. But I'm interested in generally whether people are upgrading or downgrading at the moment, because they're driving a lot less, right?
Sure. It's true. I mean, I think the majority of people are downgrading vehicles. I mean, if you're talking about downgrading or driving less.
Well, I think that a lot of people, because they're driving less, they probably think, well, why should I be driving the fancy show-off car that I was driving before? Or maybe the one that I needed to be more comfortable because I was on the road for like 2 hours a day. And now they're on the road for 30 minutes a day. And they're like, you know what? I could probably do this in a little Hyundai or something rather than worry about a more expensive Merc.
Well, I think it goes two ways. I mean, if you've put on a lot of less mileage last year, I mean, you're probably going to keep your vehicle longer because you just didn't do the mileage you used to do. So that's one side of it. And then the other side is obviously true what you said. I mean, if you don't need a vehicle to travel that much, why get something expensive with a huge monthly installment? Rather get something smaller and just get an A to B. So yeah, that's true.
Are dealers having a rough time at the moment, or are you guys in general? Do you speak?
I think national. I mean, national, or if you took all the brands together, I mean, I think we're a little bit like something around about 10% down year to date. Or year to year, you measure February to February. So it's not that much of a difference, but I mean, it's very brand specific. So, I mean, from a affordability a vehicle like your Toyotas, Hyundais, and so forth, they're still doing well. And some of them are just going up. Your luxury vehicles are your Mercedes, BMW, Audi significantly went down in numbers. So. Wow. Yeah, I mean, so the majority of people are downgrading, I believe. But interesting enough, your top earners will always be there and they will always be buying. So even I say top earners, I mean, I'm saying vehicle prices of 1.8 and up. Those guys will just be there forever.
If you've got a 1.7 million rand car, you're not a top earner. Just all right. It's like, wow, from starting at 1.8 million rand, you could be a top earner. So if you've got the 1.9 million rand car, you literally park in the far part of the parking lot in top earner.
The reason why I said 1.8 was, I mean, your GLE, for instance, your GLE 400, that goes for around about 1.8 now. So that was the cutoff point.
That's the benchmark.
Yeah, but I'll pull you through on 1.7. We can make a deal.
Thanks. Yeah, 1.75 max. I just can't do. I can't go all the way to 8.
So let me ask you this, because again, like you guys at DeWitt Motors, you don't just have Mercedes, even though you know that's kind of your flagship stuff. But you actually sell a whole bunch of different cars, right?
Yes. Yeah. We'll do Honda as well, and Mitsubishi, and then obviously the commercial side as well, trucks and buses and sprinters and so forth. Yeah.
What are your roads like in Ermelo? Have you guys got a lot of potholes, or are they?
It's an absolute mess. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh. Yeah, it's getting worse and worse as well. So that's a good point. I mean, obviously. So I mean, we don't sell sedans anymore. I mean, everything we sell is either a mini SUV, medium SUV size, or big SUV, because you can't drive a sedan with small tires anymore. I mean, around town or in town. So
you need to sell all over the country. So you probably can get, you know, customers who are buying from you in Cape Town or whatever. It's not just products.
I want to ask you if that's a literal direct product of potholes, because for me it's like more of a family thing. Like, people graduate from a small one or two person car that's quite practical, and then suddenly the next step is needing it for kids. So you get this upgrading to an SUV. Some people just like them because they're safe and big, I guess. But like, is there a correlation between an area's roads deteriorating and fewer people buying sedans? Because that's very interesting.
Absolutely. I mean, if I compare my numbers to a city dealer, I mean, they sell way more sedans, your A class, a C class, a C coupes, than we do. I mean, everything we sell on the Mercedes-Benz side, starts with a G, GLA, GLB, GLC, which is all SUV vehicles. So it's definitely that way. Yeah.
And those people you said they're still in the market. They still like buying new cars. That's not going to change. It's like your top cream of the cream people who
Not spend money on the car. It's interesting. I mean, I think me and you had this chat. Our most expensive SUV at the moment is the G-Wagon, your G63.
Right.
Going for 3.7, and that sells like donuts at the moment. I mean, if you get three, you'll sell them in the next day. All three will be gone.
3.7. And tell me, Phil, is that where they start? And if you want like the tinted sunroof, like, is 3.7 the big daddy / mommy, non-gender descript patriarch?
The G63s are quite fully loaded, so there's not a lot of extras you can add.
Because for my 3.7 million, I mean, I know I said I was going to stop at 1.8, but you're talking it up, and I can go to 3.7, but I don't want to have to pay for bigger mags or a special
seat. You can squeeze out a bit more.
You're throwing in some things, and you got a deal. I'm buying it, but I'm not paying for any extras. We'll talk after. Thanks, dude.
We'll talk after. It's shot, man. Yeah.
So I can't help it. I went and had a look, and apparently you've got a Ferrari FF listed there on your site.
Oh, yes, yeah. The Ferrari was we didn't trade a Ferrari in. I mean, we had this one customer who just liked to sell his car, and we offered to try and sell it for him. So I actually should take it down because I think it has been sold. So, yeah,
easy thing to sell? You take on an exotic, really expensive Ferrari. Do you think, okay, we got our work cut out for us, but it's going to be worth it? Or do you go, this guy needs help selling it. That's a cash in. Let's help him.
You see, Ferrari is a little bit different for the Ermelo market. I mean, it's once again, it's a sedan and not an SUV. Potholes,
dude.
And
that's why I have a Ferrari.
That's the only reason.
Where can I drive it? I mean, I'd have to put it on a tow thing, take it to the track. I'd already do that with my Bugatti. No.
But yeah, I mean, if you use Auto Trader, what we use, obviously you can advertise nationally. And then, everybody can see it. You can see it in your office where you're sitting in Pretoria. So, I mean, if you're in the market and the price is right, I mean, there's a price for every car. I mean, if it's 2 million, 3 million, 4 million, it's all relative. So at the end of the day.
May I ask what the Ferrari went for?
I can't remember. I mean, Gareth, what was the price there on the...
I don't know, but it was around 3 million,
right about there, if I can remember correctly. Yeah.
So, all right, let's just talk about what I'm driving at the moment because...
Yeah.
I'm getting a whole bunch of. This is the first time that I've driven a Japanese car ever in my life, and part of the reason that we're doing this thing with Phil and David Motors is because I don't know a lot about cars. So the only way I'm going to discover a lot about cars is if I drive them. So I've driven a Merc, I've driven the Bucky for a while, I've driven a bunch of different cars, and this is the first time I've had a Japanese one. So it took me a while to get used to the indicator being on the opposite side to the windscreen wipers. I still switch on the windscreen wipers when I turn instead of the indicator.
Think about that.
It takes so long to get used to. It takes I still do it. I've been driving my first indicator on the right car that I've ever had for 2.5-3 years and still always put the windscreen wiper on.
But this is the short wheelbase Pajero, and it's a really nice car. I can't figure out whether I want the back seats down or up because the only passenger in my car is usually my dog, and he's now sitting on the front seat. So,
you know what I did? I took mine out.
Oh, you take them out completely?
Exactly. Yeah. because I'm also driving one. So yeah, I just took it out completely. Yeah.
There's a lot of space when you take those back seats out. Hey? That's a huge boot. I mean, like you could fit. It's monstrous.
Exactly. I mean, so it's like a
Say that again, Phil. What was that?
No, I mean, if you're taking the seats out, it's like a short wheelbase bucky, you know, out of space. And yeah, that's what I did. So yeah, that's an option because I didn't like the seats either. I mean, it takes a lot of the space back in the boot. Yeah. If you take them down. Yeah.
I did have Sia as a passenger in that car a little while ago when we went to Constitution Hill and there were three of us in the car. So Sia sat in the back and he didn't complain. He wasn't moaning. So there is space when you've got those seats up as well. And there's still a little bit, you know.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm hearing you guys using this term. What does it mean? What does short wheel mean?
Short wheel.
Short wheelbase.
Yeah, there are just two versions. There's a long one and a short one. So the other one is the bigger one is a 7-seater or 5-seater with 2 seats that fold back in the boots. And this is just a shorter one. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Sia, if you look at the car from the side and you can see, I don't know, it's so hard with this mirror thing, you can see how far apart from each other the two wheels are. They make one that's got that much. And then they decide they want a longer one. So they literally move the wheels further apart and you've got a bit more car in the middle. So that's why you get longer and shorter. But it affects the handling and a couple of other things as well. So some people buy it for the space. They want the longer one. And other people buy it because it drives differently.
That is the best handling. You know what? Can I tell you something?
Make some
Gord just explained short wheelbase to Sia better than I ever could. Well done.
So you'll get the ordinary one, and then some people will want the short wheelbase one.
So listen, the thing about these Japanese cars, they're actually pretty damn reliable. I mean, I think there are, if you consider how many people, and I see a lot of Pajeros now that I'm driving one, I see a lot of them all over the place. A nice car. It's very economical. This one's a diesel. So it seems to give me quite a lot of range. And even though, as I said, I'm driving a lot less than usual, it's a hell of a nice car inside.
And diesel's very clean these days.
It
like
is.
It's really good.
It's like a very straightforward thing to drive. It's not complicated at all. Would you agree with that, Phil?
Yeah, sure. I mean, and then, I mean, going back to what Gord mentioned on extras, for instance, I mean, you get a Pajero 3.2 diesel short wheelbase. There's only one model. The one you're driving is LCDs. I mean, you can't spec it otherwise. There's not a manual or a petrol or anything else. I mean, there's just one model. There are no optional extras. That's how it is. So as it is, it comes out standard, yeah.
And haven't they stopped making these or something? There are only a few left available.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, that was one of the reasons I borrowed to you because, I mean, I don't think we'll ever get the chance again. Because, I mean, I think in the next week or so, the ship will dock and then Pajeros will be finished until the end of days.
And then that's it, right? They're not making any more of these anywhere.
Exactly, yeah. These are literally the last bunch that we've got. So, I mean, we ordered a couple for stock reasons. And obviously, it's a supply and demand thing. As soon as the last one has been sold, it probably, in my view, it will become some of a, you know, an icon or so for future purposes.
I said it's a straightforward thing to drive. And I want to ask you a general question here because I wonder how many people are driving four-wheel drive cars in South Africa and don't actually know how to use them. You know, it's got two gear levers effectively. The one gives you two-wheel or four-wheel, rear or front. And most people, including me, don't know what the hell that is. I mean, most people have it in their car. It's an incredible mechanical and technological advancement. And because they're not driving through, dry riverbeds and on obstacle courses, they don't ever really get to exercise that stuff. Do you think
I didn't actually even know that the Pajero is a full function four-wheel drive. I thought it was one of those nice, safe, family, comfortable SUVs for Saint and Sharon's and potholes.
No, dude, you can engage this four-wheel drive, and it's quite an incredible thing. But do you think most people even know how to use that, Phil?
You know, I think it depends where you stay. You know, I mean, you should have seen how it looked here after Eloise, Cyclone Eloise, beginning of end of January. So, I mean, if you did in that 4x4, yeah, and you were staying on a farm, you were screwed. I mean, you were stuck on your farm. So, I mean, and everybody knows.
Phil send me pictures of flood.
Oh, on the Vaal.
Phil send me pictures of this flood. Yeah, geez, man. So apparently, did you know, Gord, Phil's full of information. The Vaal River actually starts in Ermelo.
Oh, really? Oh, I would have thought it would have started in Irma High and then flowed downhill.
Okay.
Irma High.
I got Gareth at least once on the show.
It's a dumb joke, but I just love that.
It's terrible, I know.
All right, just quickly, because we are running out of time here, and I there's so much I want to ask you. So let me get straight to the point. There are people who are thinking of buying new cars now, and there are people who are thinking of buying used cars right now. Give them advice, not as the car dealer now, but as someone who, like, imagine I'm your friend and I need advice from you. Would now be the right time? What would you advise? Let's say my budget is X or Y. So give us two options. Give us like someone like Gord who has millions of rands and wants to buy the G-Wagon with
millions,
all the
two or three. You make out like I'm being wasteful.
And then give us someone who's, you know, like Sia has to buy another car because his car has been written off. Is it being written off, Sia? Is that the story?
Yeah. So
did you parallel park
technically,
Sia?
That, yes, God, that's what happened. So technically, I am on the market now.
No. So give
in more
one
ways
piece
than one.
Sia and a different piece of advice to Gord.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, sorry, Sia, that's bad news. Sorry to hear about it. Well, I think usually the first question we will ask you is more or less what you'd like to spend, either on a cash payment or monthly installment wise. Quick or easy way to work it out is for every 50,000 that you finance, you will pay 1,000 rand a month. Okay, so if your vehicle is worth 100,000 or you finance 100,000, your installment will be 2 grand a month. Okay, if your vehicle is you buy it for 400,000, your installment will be 8,000. So that's more or less a way of working out what you would like to spend per month or so.
Okay.
Then, I mean, so we can chat afterwards and I'll give you a couple of options and see what we can do, what you had before, what you would like now, what didn't you like in your previous car, what would you like in your next car, and so on.
I'm interested to know because it actually applies to me directly. I've got a Toyota and it's like, as Gareth mentioned, it's very reliable, but it's an Auris, and there's really nothing I like about it. It's the most vanilla car in the world, and I also bought it from someone I'm not particularly fond of. But I paid 125K for it when it was 7 years old, and I've had it for 3 years. It's now 10 years old, and I'd like to sort of side trade it for something of similar value that's just not this car. But I wonder, like, at this time, if I feel I'm going to lose a lot of equity on the car, and it's going to cost me a lot of money to side grade. At this time, I won't get the value of the car to me out of it by selling it because it's a shit market, right?
I don't think so. I don't think it's a bad market at all. I mean, at the moment, I mean, if we take new vehicle prices, I mean, in the last year, if we take the last 18 months, I mean, most of the manufacturers have had a price increase of almost 25%. So.
And if you want a white Toyota Auris with no personality, but it's reliable as shit, you can give me anything you want.
Okay.
Give me a bicycle with a small motor and you can have an Auris. I'll talk to you after the show.
You will sell your vehicle in 5 seconds, I promise you. I mean, there will always be a market for that car. Absolutely. I mean, you can just imagine.
Let's press go on that.
Yeah.
I'll WhatsApp you some photos after the show.
No worries. Yeah. But then we need to see what we're going to replace you with. And I mean, the one side is you will get more for your car, but the other side is, I mean, you're going to pay more for a new car.
Give me that McGann that people keep selling to other people because it never works. I'll take it.
I mean, it sounds to me like my question and advice has probably brought you two new sales this morning. This is a good deal.
Jokes aside, it's a question I've been wondering about. It doesn't bother me enough, especially since I drive once or twice a week now, that it's like on my mind to make a plan about it. And I've got this perceived, look, it's probably not a good time anyway, and who really cares? Like I said, if I can get something just similar, not even an upgrade or a downgrade, without having to pay in too much.
Yeah.
I'm your guy. And I'm glad to know that that's a feasible option because now I'm going to do it.
Yeah. No, I mean, let's start with a quote. That's the easiest way. And then, I mean, we can take it there and then we can see we can go up and down and see what's going to work for you. Yeah. Awesome. Easy.
I love
so
it.
So the answer is contact Phil if you don't know what to do.
So listen, while we're doing that, you can follow all of the DeWitt Motors social media accounts. You'll find them on Instagram. You'll also find a picture there of the Pajero that I'm driving at the moment, which is awesome. And you can ask Phil directly if you have any questions. He's the guy to talk to. He's in charge there. And, you know, if anyone can make it work, it's him.
That's ask DeWitt Dr. Phil.
D-E, exactly. D-E and space W-I-T Motors. And we'll put all the different links on cliffcentral.com. After this podcast. So, all right, Phil, very good to see you, dude.
Yeah, same here, guys. Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, try not to get the COVID again.
I will not, thanks.
And for all of your short wheel-based and long wheel-based vehicle inquiries, you're the guy.
That's right. There we go. Like, how did George do it? Like this and like that. And we've learned something new.
Inside language, this thanks, is short Phil. Wheelbase car, and that's long wheelbase car.
Cheers, Phil. Cheers, there he is. Gordo.
I so badly wanted to break out in song and go, it's the last Pajero, and there's reason to believe maybe this one that is leaving is the last.
Gord, we get this from Tabo this morning, which I think you'd appreciate. Tabo says, I'm here just for the BDC. You know what that
I still
is.
Think bunny distraction centers are immoral, unethical, archaic, and should be done away with. Big Bunny tells you that they're actually painless, but that's because they make so much money from bunny pelts.
Oh. Bunny distraction centers is what a BDC is. A bunny distraction center, something
automated
which we are.
Bunny distraction.
Okay.
This shit goes on, and people are blissfully unaware of it. You don't know how your cows are farmed, you don't know how your bunny pelts are distracted.
Thank you for showing us the light.
This machine has to distract them in a rolling pin way so that the meat shoots out one end and the pelt remains on the other, and it's really horrible.
The meat shoots out. Ew.
Yeah, it debones, de-meats, and pelts in one go, but the poor rabbit has to be rolled. It's the little things there.
It's such a horrible thing. Oh, my God. All right, very good.
So for those people who know what we're talking about, we got onto a cuck talking tangent a couple of shows ago about bunny destruction because Gareth has bunnies that get massacred at his estate. And somebody, one of our listeners, drew a really cool machine of a bunny destruction machine. It was funny as hell. So if you think we're entirely on crack, not entirely.
Oh, my gosh. But we didn't get to your Justice League four-hour movie point.
We've got like three and a half minutes here. So just quickly, my two questions about Justice League, because yeah, that's a good point. So Justice League is the movie that Gord says is out now, and it's DC Comics, and it's their chance to kind of make up for all the terrible movies that they've made. But why is it necessary? Why does Superman need to team up with anybody if he's Superman? He can do
it's
anything
the same.
Already. Why does he need Batman? Batman's just a normal dude with like gadgets.
Money. Well, because it's not all just about your capabilities. It's not all just about your capabilities. Like Superman can't be in multiple places at once. He can't necessarily not be deceived by Luthor's evil plan. But the main reason for it is exactly identical to the Avengers. You take all these individual franchises, you build them, you put them together. It's a big finale. But they just did everything about it badly. Except for the first Wonder Woman, I don't think DC have done a good movie. I didn't even watch Aquaman, and I like this shit. I didn't watch the Justice League because I knew what happened with it. Look, why Zack Snyder left and the studio took over is kind of shrouded, and they seem to have come to some sort of, they obviously don't hate each other because they've now recollaborated. But what happens here is that Zack Snyder was making the Justice League movie and the story was set and everything that was going to happen was decided and it wasn't going well and the studio was making changes and Zack Snyder left. They then reshot whole parts of the movie. That's why Henry Cavill had that, it's Cavill, not Cahill, eh? Yeah, he had that CGI moustache in the scenes because he had done the movie, gone to do Mission Impossible, had it in his contract he had to have a moustache, so they CGI'd it out and had this terrible, half the Superman scenes he's got this terrible CGI moustache being done out and they changed the story, mm-hmm. They took out the main bad guy and made his henchman the bad guy and it was just a mess and it was total shit. But they shot so much that the original stuff is still there and needed, and just needed some more special effects and a couple of extra things shot. The public kept saying, release the Snyder Cut. Like, this thing was crap, but we know it had potential to be good. So then they couldn't figure out whether to make it like 5 1-hour episodes or cut it down and somehow get it under 3 hours. And they thought, well, it's a special project anyway, so it's just one 4-hour movie. But I mean, a lot of my friends have watched half of it and then watched half of it. They don't normally aim to make this 4 hours. But it's a completely different story, and it's very dark, which I think was the studio's problem with it to begin with. But DC's supposed to be dark. That's why they're different than Marvel. And I haven't actually watched it. I haven't had 4 hours yet, but I've got it. And people are raving about it.
Who's the bad guy?
Oh, God, what's his name, man? Darkseid. Darkseid.
Darkseid or Darkseid?
Darkseid, S-E-I-D. So he's he's sent Big Scary Thing with horns ahead of him as a henchman to go and kick ass, and ultimately he's the bad guy, and they just removed him. They were like, ah, big, ugly, scary demon-looking oak with a hammer will do. Looking for the boxes of power for no real reason except that they're cool MacGuffins, whereas with Darkseid, it's about, like, he needs them to take over the universe.
Ooh.
But it's
I'm still hung up on Cyborg.
Cyborg didn't make sense in Justice League. I mean, I watched like the first half an hour of it. His story like was patchy, but it's all just because it was a re-edit to make a new story. It's like Robotech. They took one thing and tried to cut it into something else.
Ruth says Steppenwolf is the other guy.
That's right. Yeah, and he's meant to be in it as like a henchman.
Okay, and then Karen says Batman just has a lot of issues. Did he go for counseling at some point? Well, didn't the story with Batman is like his parents were killed, right? So that's why he's the way he is.
And you saw the police didn't do anything about it, so justice became his jolt.
I can't believe we're adult men talking about this stuff as if it's real. Thanks very much.
Says the Oak, who's always happy to talk about Star Wars, which is wizard-wested in space.
Oh.
No, I'm being sarcastic. You remember that word facetious that you brought up?
You care a lot about Star Wars. You can bullshit as much as you like.
I do like Star Wars. I'm denying what you think. I'm not denying. I'm saying I'm into it just like you are. That's why I'm making fun of it.
Yeah, this is the same crap. It's just a different flavor.
Totally. Totally.
But
I love it.
But Star Wars is good, not debatable later on, but the Star Wars movies are brilliant. The DC movies have just been shite. And I've never seen a worse – only Anchorman and Kingsman 2. Anchorman 2 and Kingsman 2 are more disappointing sequels than Wonder Woman 1984. Like, that is just absolute garbage. It's worth watching just to see how bad it is. Like, you think I'm exaggerating? Wow. Watch Wonder Woman 1984 to see how bad it is.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet. Now I'm going to watch it just to complain about it afterwards so we can moan next
week. Just pick 15 minutes somewhere in the middle of the movie and watch that. It won't make sense, but you wouldn't have missed anything. Just before we have to go, did anyone understand? Did you watch Tenet? Christopher Nolan's Tenet, the movie Tenet. The most confusing movie ever of all time. This dude is known for doing Inception and confusing movies. But you watch Tenet, and the most you'll ever understand about Tenet is the 5 minutes before you put it on.
Jesus. Okay.
That's quite a way to sell it.
So you haven't done a good deal of selling there.
Yeah, there have been some crap movies lately.
All right, everybody. That's all.
I think Gareth got cut off right in the middle of saying goodbye.
We will see you tomorrow at M, nice and early. Have an excellent Wednesday. CliffCentral.com